Next on Making Sense of the Madness, the market is on a roller coaster ride, economist Kirk Elliott reports. And Graham Ledger will share an exclusive interview with General Flynn. And award-winning journalist Alex Newman will let us know all of the latest moves by the deep state and how patriots can counter. We're going to question the mainstream narrative and expose media propaganda right now.
It's a disgrace what they're doing to our country. But we can erase the calamities of the Biden years. All it takes is a House, a Senate, and a president who will put America first. One of the greatest travesties of all is to see a person in the White House who, even after years of political experience, has absolutely no clue how to be the President of the United States. And I hope he has recovered, because, as you know, he fell off his bicycle today. No, I'm serious. I hope he's okay. Fell off a bicycle. I make this pledge to you today. I will never, ever ride a bicycle.
That was just a little levity from our troller-in-chief. Well, the markets have been seesawing up and down. Let's get an update from Dr. Kirk Elliott, our resident PhD economist. Kirk, what's the latest?
Oh, boy. A lot of stuff happening today, obviously, right? Because 3 weeks ago, the stock market, the S&P 500 was down for 8 weeks in a row. Worst it's been. We haven't seen that since the Great Depression. And then we had a week 9. Then we had a week 10. Then we had a week 11. And 8 weeks in a row was we haven't seen that since the Great Depression, right? So things are kind of falling apart. And so as you start to look at some of the main economic leaders around the country, like Goldman Sachs, some of their economists, they raise the recession probability odds and they cut the GDP outlook, right? So, well, of course, of course, you're going to raise the recession probability odds because we're in one right now. It's like 100%. Doesn't get much worse than that, right? So things are happening there. But then 80% of the economists now globally see stagflation as a long-term risk. And how do you prepare for stagflation? Well, what is it? It's rising prices with fewer people working. That means that government revenues will come down because of fewer people working, tax revenues are going to diminish. And so they're going to have to resort to an inflate or die scenario. The inflationary pressures that come from printing money cause things like gold and silver to go up. It causes tangible assets across the board to go up. But then one of the big things that we have to look at when it comes to the markets, like the stock market, they do not respond very well at all, like horribly, to geopolitical conflict. So just some of the things that I was, you know, kind of investigating this morning and looking into when it comes to geopolitical conflict, Europe is full of problems, as is the United Kingdom, as both are raising problems for each other. Turkey and Greece are now at loggerheads. Africa is seeing less European influence as resources become more vital to the European Union. So what does that mean? When food dries up, because we're seeing some foodflation here, right? To many parts of the world, that is going to raise even more conflict, because places like India are no longer exporting wheat. They're the second largest producer of wheat in the world. So you're going to see parts of the world that are actually going to starvation type mode. Food is going to become a huge issue.
I totally agree with you, Kirk. When food, first of all, wars are usually about, you know, who gets resources, right? And then the less resources there are, the more likely you've got civil unrest, people going crazy because they just want to get some food. You've seen that in the third world, and that could start going to the second and first world. But just a few data points to add at this probability of war in different places. Tensions at all-time highs between, you know, Iran and Israel. And they're threatening to bomb a palace in Syria because they're coordinating with Iran. And then you've got Lithuania blocking all Russian goods to a section of Russia that's blocked by land that borders their country. So that's increasing tensions, with Russia possibly having conflict in more parts of Europe. So Yes, and that's not good for the global economy, not good for American economy with all of this geopolitical uncertainty. And that's good for gold and silver, though, right?
Well, it's very good for gold and silver. And I mean, you look at Russia and Ukraine, right? I mean, what are the sound bites coming out of there today? The famine will start now and they will lift sanctions. I mean, what a cynical, gross joke, right? Planning on starving out, Ukraine. And it's like, so these kind of tensions will cause gold and silver to go through the roof, because not only do gold and silver respond very well to inflationary pressures, which is what we've got when they print money out of thin air, they just keep devaluing it. But gold and silver respond very well to turbulence, turmoil, uncertainty, change, chaos, all of those things as a flight for safety kind of investment. When the foundations around us are crumbling, gold and silver go up. All the geopolitical conflict that you and I just talked about briefly, that's chaos and uncertainty and turbulence. And it causes people to operate out of a state of fear. That state of fear actually does cause gold and silver to go up, because it's stable. People want something that's real in times like this. And that's one of the fundamental reasons it caused it to go up, in addition to the inflationary pressures and the supply chain disruptions and everything else we're seeing in the silver market right now.
Certainly. And it looks like Bitcoin recently has not been that store of value that people had hoped it would be in these types of environments. Perhaps long term it is, but in the short term, the price can just fluctuate like crazy. So any comment on Bitcoin and cryptos that have been crashing?
Well, I mean, the last I read, some of the analysis on Bitcoin is to come down to 8,000 to 10,000 before this is over. I mean, but it's down over 30% over the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's in free fall. And we have to look at, when there's times of chaos and uncertainty, they tend to be rising and falling with the tech stock market in general, right? Because tech stocks, the NASDAQ is down over 35% year to date. It's only June, right? But when people are looking for something that's real, crypto doesn't look or feel real, right? It is a thing, right? It is an investment that can go through the roof or it can go away overnight. But when people want something real, they're looking for tangible assets, and cryptocurrency is about as far away from a tangible asset that's real as anything is.
Very good for your insights. Thank you so much, Kirk. If people are interested in getting a free consultation with you, they can click on the link in the description below. Next, Graham Ledger will share an exclusive interview with General Flynn as soon as we get back.
Government-induced inflation, taxes, rising interest rates, and political instability. They all have a crushing effect on our investments, often causing the stock market to go down. They can also cause gold and silver to go up. There's a time to be in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, and there's a time to get out. This is the time to hold gold and silver. Kirk Elliott, double PhD, has been protecting individual Americans' assets for more than two decades.
Hi, I'm Kirk Elliott. There is no such thing as a bad investment. There is only bad timing for investments. And now is the time to own gold and silver.
Now is the time to own physical metals in an IRA, a 401k, and of course, outside of a retirement plan. Don't let the government destroy your hard-earned assets. Please call 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900 for gold, silver, and undeniable economic protection against out-of-control government.
Well, Graham Ledger is an Emmy Award-winning newsman, formerly of One American News. Graham, I know you've got your eye on the Supreme Court. What is the latest there?
Well, the Supreme Court did not rule and issue opinions on the big ones that we're waiting for. We'll get to those in a moment, including the decision that could overturn Roe versus Wade, the preview that was leaked out back in May and then resulted in Justice Kavanaugh being threatened by some maniac pro-abortionist out there from California. A significant ruling was handed down, this one out of Maine. This is Carson versus Macon. It probably wasn't on the radar of a lot of people, but it's an important one, because what the state of Maine was doing is they were giving out tuition assistance in various forms to parents wanting to send their children to alternative schools than public schools, but they were excluding any religious schools. So they would hand out tuition to anybody going to a private school. But if this Catholic school over here, a Protestant school over there, a religious school, a Jewish academy, they were excluded from the tuition that was being, tuition assistance, I should say, that was being handed out. And clearly that was showing favoritism. It was a 6-3 ruling. And you can guess the three justices that were on the side of, hey, it's just fine to discriminate against these schools that happen to infuse religion in their curriculum. It was the three main liberal judges. And so the six majority said, hey, state of Maine, you can't do that. You can't discriminate. It's clear discrimination against these schools that happen to infuse religion in their curriculum. So that was the main decision. There was a total of five handed down today. We were waiting on a full slate of 18. So five take away from 18 is 13. We have 13 remaining. And Sean, you know, we're waiting for some significant rulings, and we can run through them if you want.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't follow the Supreme Court too closely. So what's up? What's up next for the possible decisions?
Well, one of them is the Remain in Mexico so-called policy. This is Texas versus Biden. The state of Texas said, hey, we want to continue this policy that was implemented during the Trump administration. And that is, if you're a so-called asylum seeker and you violate our sovereignty, you come into the country, they give paperwork to these people and say, hey, you can't stay in our country. You're not a legal citizen. You're not a legal resident. You're an illegal alien by definition. Yeah, you say you want asylum, but we're going to have to figure out whether you deserve asylum. And so the Trump administration said, hey, you have to remain in Mexico. Kind of makes sense. But see, for me, for someone who's an absolutist like myself, these people shouldn't be violating our sovereignty at all. They should be turned around, given no paperwork, and say, hey, get the hell out of here. This is our house. You violated our sovereignty. If you are an actual person who says that you deserve asylum, then go ahead and prove it, but follow the channels that you're supposed to follow. Don't violate our sovereignty. Don't come into our house without asking. Yet this is the Remain in Mexico policy. It's better than allowing them to do what the Biden administration wants to do, and that is give them some paperwork and let them roam about the country, never to be seen again. We know the majority of these people who are given paperwork and allowed to go about our country, these illegal aliens that have violated our sovereignty, given paperwork, we know the majority of them never show up for court. So that's the ruling we're waiting on out of Texas. There's another one. This is a very interesting one. I'm sure folks have followed this one, kind of fallen off the radar, but this is out of Washington State, Kennedy versus Bremerton schools, I should say. This is Joe Kennedy, the football coach. You remember the football coach who after the games would take a knee at the 50-yard line and pray to God? And the school said, hey, you can't do that. And eventually he was fired. So Joe Kennedy took his case to the Supreme Court saying, hey, you know what? This is not a violation of church and state. This is protected activity under the First Amendment. And so we probably hopefully Justice Roberts in his not so infinite wisdom will side with a majority ruling on this one. Probably you look for a 6-3 on this one that, yes, of course, the coach under the First Amendment has the ability, it has nothing to do with establishing a government religion. This is a guy exercising his First Amendment rights. Another ruling we're waiting out of is out of New York. This is the New York Pistol Association that is challenging the CCW, concealed carry process for a permit in New York. In New York, the burden of proof is on the person trying to get the CCW. And you have to show that your life is in imminent danger in order for you. I don't know where they read that in the Second Amendment. I don't see it anywhere in the Second Amendment. But apparently these anti-gun grabbers in New York say you have to prove affirmatively that your life is in danger. Very similar to what they do in California. I'm one of the rare people out of California who has a CCW. And I was able to show that, yeah, people are threatening my life. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have gotten it. Another ruling we're waiting, an opinion we're waiting for is out of West Virginia. This may seem mundane. It's West Virginia versus the EPA, but it's a very important one because this is the fourth branch of government, aka the swamp, that is out there issuing laws and acting like an elected legislature, even though it's not. It's not accountable to the people. And so this is an attempt to rein in government agencies like the EPA, who are writing law when they shouldn't be doing so. And then, of course, is the Dobbs versus Jackson out of Mississippi. This is the case that may overturn Roe versus Wade. The Mississippi law says that, hey, life begins at 15 weeks. Now, many people would say life begins at conception, but this is the law in Mississippi. And Roe versus Wade effectively puts it at 23 weeks. So there's a conflict there. We know that there's been a potential preview of this ruling. We're just waiting to find out. Supreme Court will issue its rulings on these matters either Thursday of this week or sometime next week, we would guess, unless they're going to throw us a curveball, Sean.
I guess you never know, but I think it's good for people to get their pulse, you know, on the nation and on the courts of what you described today. And certainly weigh in with your local legislators about, you know, how you feel about these topics so that we can get some change in this country. So, Graham, you recently had an interview with General Flynn. I was wondering if you could tell me about that.
General Flynn, despite what the mainstream media may be reporting, is alive and well and relevant and engaged and working with the people. He is one of the leaders of an organization, a 501c4, called the American Project, the America Project. And this is an umbrella organization that helps smaller organizations at the granular level that may need financial help, can also help candidates, specific candidates who possibly may need some help. And so this is what General Flynn is focusing on, besides going around the country and giving speeches and telling people to engage at the local level, which is the right thing to do. The general is engaged in this project and is growing it out as we approach the 2024 election, 2022 election in November, and then again, the 2024 presidential election. And General Flynn was very candid with me. And one of the areas we talked about for, by the way, about 40, 45 minutes was going back in time to late 2016, early 2017, when he was unjustifiably targeted and set up by the FBI under Crossfire Hurricane. And he gave some perspective on that. Roll tape.
You were not the target of the FBI probe per se. You were the obstacle to Crossfire Hurricane. In your heart and in your mind, do you believe that you, if you were able to stay in as National Security Advisor, would have stumbled upon this, if you will, would have seen it and would have brought it to an end?
Crossfire Hurricane, and then the name that they had given me specifically was Crossfire Razor. It actually changed the course of history for the United States of America. And we are now on this path that we're all feeling, we all believe that something's not right. I was an obstacle. And that's why Barack Obama told Donald Trump after Trump won, don't put this guy, Mike Flynn, in here. Don't bring him in. As the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States, I have extraordinary authority and responsibility. And all of this would have come to an immediate halt. So the drive to get me out of there, I mean, as fast as they could, worked. When I was designated as the incoming National Security Advisor, and then I spent a couple of weeks as the nation's National Security Advisor, I was asking a lot of questions of very, very large organizations in the government, in the intelligence community, the law enforcement investigative arms, you know, plural, of the country, as well as others in state, in the, you know, diplomatic and defense and commercial commerce channels.
So in other words, you were going where they didn't want you
to go. The whole Russiagate, the entire thing was false. So for the entirety of Donald Trump's presidency, he was under this cloud of Russiagate, as though he's some, you know, dupe of Putin's. And they still, you know, their media out there still talks about it.
So General Flynn is, he's not bitter. He's focused like a laser to try and right this country. It's the same goal that I have. It's the same goal that you have, Sean. And that is to put this republic back on the constitutional rails. And for more, if you want to watch that entire interview, please go to AmericanMediaPeriscope.com. You can click on a little picture of me. And you can join General Flynn. I call him Flynn's Fighters. He calls himself, he's got another name for it. I would like to say Flynn's Army, but apparently he doesn't want us to say Flynn's Army, because that's what we are, right? We need to join together. That's what the left does so well. If you're interested in that, it's America Project, AmericaProject.com, and you can join Flynn's Army, even though he doesn't want you to call it the Flynn's Army.
Yes, you know, he coined that term digital soldier, and I consider myself a digital soldier right now in this fight against the deep state. So thank you, Graham, for reporting and for that excellent interview. People need to check that out. Thank you for reporting today. Next, award-winning journalist Alex Newman will update us on food shortages and gun grabs as soon as we get back.
Inflation is out of control. The price of gasoline has doubled in a very short time, and interest rates are set to rise. How do you protect and grow your portfolio to make sure that you do not outlive your assets? Invest in annuities that have rate lock. Rate lock is an innovative new feature that allows you to lock in your rate of return at any time during the year to lock in these volatile upswings of the market. And unlike CDs and money market accounts, they accumulate tax deferred and can participate in the upside of market indexes. And they're probate free, and they can provide an income that you can't outlive. With all the different companies, features, indexes, and benefits which annuities offer, it can be confusing to choose which annuity is best for your unique situation. Let a company you can trust help you select a rate lock annuity that's right for you. Add an annuity to your retirement portfolio and start enjoying the many benefits that smart investors love. Call the Cleveland Insurance Group at 844-USA-2024. That's the Cleveland Insurance Group at 844-USA-2024. The Cleveland Insurance Group, 844-USA-2024.
Alex Newman is an award-winning international journalist of the Liberty Sentinel and the New American. Alex is here. So, Alex, I saw today that the UN food chief has rationed food for refugees by 50%. Can you give us any more data points that we can wrap our heads around regarding these manufactured food shortages that are already happening?
Yeah, well, this is not new. In fact, I warned years ago when we were going from 2020 to 2021, I put out a big article offering what I thought was going to be happening in 2021. And one of the things that I mentioned is that they are going to be creating food shortages. We're going to be watching the systematic destruction of our food supply. And it's interesting because even certain UN, leading UN officials were warning about this. In fact, David Beasley, the head of the World Food Program at the United Nations, the only American, by the way, who runs a UN agency, a specialized UN agency, was saying that because of the COVID lockdowns, we were headed into what he described as a famine of biblical proportions that would result in massive levels of famine and starvation all across the world. So this wasn't secret. This wasn't hidden. Anybody could have found this. It's just that the fake media wasn't reporting it. So I was trying to bring it out. Now, since that time, we have seen the ongoing systematic destruction of our food supply. They're taking down processing facilities. They're taking down meat processing facilities. They are killing huge numbers of animals under various guises, stopping bird flu, things like that. I suspect we're going to see something very similar with cattle soon. It looks like they are trying to spread diseases among the animal population. They're encouraging farmers not to grow food. In fact, I just talked recently to a farmer in North Dakota, was paid more money by the federal government to agree not to grow food for the next 10 years than he could have made by growing food on his farm. And so naturally, he decided not to grow food. And similar stories like this are happening all across the world and all across America. In fact, I started first reporting on this phenomenon going on overseas many years ago. And I wasn't even connecting dots at the time. I did a series of major pieces on the destruction of agriculture and independent producers in Brazil years ago. In fact, the government was taking away hundreds of thousands of hectares from productive farmers, claiming that they were going to hand that land back to Indians. And so I got a hold of the Indian chief who was supposed to be whose tribe was supposed to be receiving this land. And he said, that's ridiculous. Our people have never lived in that kind of terrain and that kind of ecosystem. We're Indians of the forest, he said, not of the Cerrado, which is kind of like a savanna-like environment where they were going to be giving them supposedly all this land. In South Africa, of course, they've been butchering and murdering and demonizing some of the most productive farmers on the face of the earth for many, many years now. Donald Trump called it out in public on Twitter and sent shivers down everybody's spine. But so there is a systematic destruction of our food supply. We're going to be feeling that. We're already feeling that with the massive increase in prices. And I'm telling you, folks, it's going to get much worse before it gets better. It takes a lot of planning to get something like this pulled off. So they've been working on it for a while.
I saw your report on the New American about how Samantha Powers, who went from, you know, the UN ambassador under Obama to then the head of the US aid organization, saying, oh, these farmers in third world countries and different farmers around the world, they can just use manure instead of fertilizer. And so, you know, can you explain why you think that's not going to solve the problem and that's going to actually escalate a crisis?
Yeah, and anybody who knows anything about commercial agriculture today knows that's beyond ridiculous, right? And you know what? I'm okay with organic food. I'm not one of those anti-organic people or whatever. But the reality is, to feed the population of the world today with the existing resources and inputs that we have requires intensive use of fertilizer. It requires advanced technology. It requires advanced infrastructure. And we're watching now the systemic destruction of this huge segment of our agricultural supply chain. And this is so clearly deliberate, right? Union Pacific Railways, owned, of course, by some of these mega corporations like BlackRock and others, told CF Industries, one of the largest fertilizer manufacturers in North America, maybe the world, that, and incidentally also owned by the same companies, BlackRock and things like this and other shareholders, that they wouldn't be able to put their fertilizer on the trains right during the spring planting season. We've seen now the sanctions on Russia wreak havoc on agricultural supply chains in terms of fertilizers and also other products that are completely necessary for being able to do industrial scale farming that can actually feed the planet. So this, again, is all deliberate. It's going to get much, much worse before it gets better. And I think in the months ahead, we're going to start seeing skyrocketing prices, followed by shortages, followed by escalating shortages. You know, first, it'll just seem like relatively minor inconveniences. Oh, they don't have chicken today. Oh, there's no butter. There's no eggs. Oh, that's unfortunate. We'll have to get something else. But before long, people will start realizing that this is much broader than just, you know, oh, they don't have eggs this week. It's going to be really, really dramatic, I think. And I would encourage everybody to start thinking about these things and preparing.
Sure. In the short term, it's inconvenience. In the medium term, it's draining away your savings. But in the long term, especially in the third world, this means civil unrest, and it's already happening in certain countries. I believe in Sri Lanka, they're having food riots, for example. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, it's going to hit the poorest nations first, because basically we have markets in agricultural commodities, and the people who can pay for those commodities will be the people who can get them. And right now, that very much includes America. We can still afford as a nation to import food if it should ever come to that. Right now, we're still net exporters of food, but you never know how long that will continue with the deliberate destruction that we're seeing. But we will see these problems first emerge in third world countries. But a lot of Americans aren't thinking in these terms yet, because there's this normalcy bias that, well, the dollar has always been king and the dollar will always be king. I mean, if worse comes to worse, we'll just have the Federal Reserve print some more money and then we'll just buy food out from under the Africans or the Latin Americans or the Asians. And there's a hiccup in that idea, in that the U.S. dollar is in an incredibly unstable position right now. Yeah, I know it looks like it's strong. People are running to the dollar for safety as other markets burn down. But I believe this is a temporary phenomenon. I believe that the U.S. dollar has been so overinflated. The Federal Reserve has created so much new currency, and the U.S. government has created so much ill will. And of course, I think part of this is planned too. They need to, as the transition from the unipolar world order led by the United States government toward a multipolar world order, they need to knock the U.S. down at least a few notches, and that means economically, militarily, culturally, et cetera. And so I think when we consider all of those factors, we're really facing a potential hyperinflationary scenario, certainly extreme inflation, where the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar relative to other currencies is going to be in drastic decline. And that's going to make it more complicated to be able to compete with other nations in terms of being able to purchase food on international markets.
Yeah, this is something that people can't really imagine right now, because we've just had so many decades of stability, or more than decades. You know, we've had a century of the American dollar being stable. And just to imagine hyperinflation, it seems like a conspiracy theory. It seems like science fiction. But, you know, we've got the CEO of Square, and it's called Block, but Jack Dorsey, he has a lot of data at his disposal, you know, being in charge of a financial company, and he's saying the hyperinflation is going to happen. And you've also got other companies that have availability of big data, and they're putting gold on their balance sheet. And I've never seen in my lifetime corporations putting gold on their balance sheet. Have you?
No, it's very bizarre, especially when you hear all the elite policymakers. Oh, gold is just a barbarous relic of the past. You don't want gold. In fact, gold has been a stable store of value for thousands of years. My guess is that will probably continue. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that there won't be any turbulence. Of course, we know the U.S. government at one point with an executive order banned private ownership of gold and started confiscating people's gold when the IRS wouldn't even let you open up your safety deposit box without an IRS agent present there to liberate your gold from you. So, you know, I don't know that it's a panacea, but I do believe that gold has been a good store of value, and it likely will continue to be a good store of value absent some sort of very dramatic policy intervention that would try to wrest it out of the hands of Americans. But I understand other central banks are also starting to accumulate gold. It looks like the Chinese have been accumulating gold for quite some time, also the Russians. And so I suspect that, I mean, these are very intelligent individuals. These are governments that have incredibly advanced intelligence agencies. I suspect that they know something that your average American doesn't.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to pay attention to what they're doing rather than what they're saying. They say that gold is just a tradition, it's just a relic, and then they continue to hoard it themselves. But Alex, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I want to get your perspective on the gun grab attempt that's happening right now in this country. When we get back.
Hydrogen is used by health professionals as a powerful antioxidant and the number one tool to fight inflammation. Studies show therapeutic potential in cancer, diabetes, digestive, and heart issues, and essentially every organ and system in the body. This is not medical advice because I'm not your doctor, but if you have any health concerns, I strongly recommend that you learn more about hydrogen. Get educated at holyhydrogen.com and order the best hydrogen generator known to man. Because hydrogen is the smallest molecule in existence, it can pass through the cell membrane and even the blood-brain barrier to clear out inflammation and free radical damage where other antioxidants just can't get to. Visit holyhydrogen.com to see the latest technology that elevates your immune system and fights inflammation. Search their research library to see if hydrogen has a track record for helping a health concern you're dealing with. Make sure to use your special American Media Periscope code AMP for $100 off your order. holyhydrogen.com.
Right. After a series of mass shootings in our country, many of them perpetrated by Democrats, in one case by a self-proclaimed authoritarian leftist, the racist who shot up the grocery store in Buffalo, who incidentally was communicating with a retired FBI agent for a while over the internet. Seems to happen a lot. I don't know what exactly that means. But anyways, lots of leftists, Democrats, radical extremists, falsely portrayed by the fake media as conservatives and Trump supporters and Fox News viewers. Now the deep state propaganda machine is going crazy over guns. And they just want common sense, reasonable gun control. They're not really coming to take your guns, except actually, yeah, they are.
That was pretty good insight from Alex Newman of the Liberty Sentinel and the New American. So, Alex, you know, I'm wondering about the possibility of some of these being false flags. You know, there's so many unanswered questions, especially about Uvalde. You know, why did they take so long to enter? Why didn't they even try to open the door? Was there a stand down order because no one was doing anything? Those are just a few of the unanswered questions. Have you been able to dig into that one or any of the other mass shootings? And also, I wanted to ask you about the attempts from the Democrats, like 1,000% tax on AR-15s.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that we know is that there is a long history, especially in recent history, of the FBI trying to radicalize people, trying to get them to do dumb things that they wouldn't otherwise do. And some of this has come out in court. I mean, just recently with the that attempted kidnapping, allegedly, of the governor of Michigan. The jury actually acquitted these people because they said this was an FBI plot. I mean, these aren't people who were out looking to commit crimes. These are people who were duped by FBI agents, by FBI informants into doing things that they otherwise would not have done. And there have been so many of these. I mean, numerous human rights organizations have put out reports saying that, you know, virtually every terror attack to have hit or been foiled in the United States over a period of, I think it was 10 or 15 years, has really been orchestrated practically by federal agents and federal informants. And so I always tell people, you know, whenever some weirdo comes around your group and starts suggesting blowing something up or killing someone or, you know, doing something illegal, there's a real good chance you're dealing with somebody working for the FBI. And that's a sad statement. The FBI was once a great law enforcement agency. They once did phenomenal work. Today, unfortunately, it has become a politicized weapon of the Biden administration and of the deep state. And so, you know, to what extent there is government involvement in some of these things that we're seeing, it's hard to know. We do know, for example, that a retired FBI agent was in regular communication with this self-proclaimed authoritarian leftist who shot up the grocery store in Buffalo, New York. Now, why? What was in those conversations? Why has all this information not been released to the public yet? And if the FBI was already in communication with him or a retired FBI operative, why was nothing done then to stop this? So these are questions that I think need to be answered. And the same thing with the Uvalde in Texas. We need to know why nobody went in there for an hour while children were being shot. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. And it was even worse than that, because parents wanted to go in and they were being tased and handcuffed and blocked from going in. Something doesn't smell right there. And I think it's critical that people continue asking questions, and it's critical that we start to get answers. And we need real investigations. You know, so many of these investigations that they do are really just cover up operations, mop up jobs. And we really do need journalists to keep asking questions and not just blindly parroting the government line.
That's a good point. I mean, if the FBI and agencies like this are supposed to be doing the investigations and they're compromised, who is there left to do it? And I guess it's people like you, like investigative journalists, take it upon themselves to try to get some answers out there to people. Is there anything else that people, regular citizens, can do, not only with that type of situation, but for the attempts by politicians to take away their sacred right to defend their families? You know, and I didn't get to dig into this aspect of the last segment. What can people do about food shortages personally for them and their families? I think that's important. And I saw that on The New American, you guys are definitely gearing all of your segments and all of your information towards what can people do, right? What can they do about all these problems? It's not just scaring them with all the problems in the world. It's like there are action items. There are things we can do, right?
That's right. You know, the old saying, education without action leads to frustration. You know, there's no point in just sitting there absorbing all of this information and all of this bad news if you're just going to sit there and stew in it. I mean, it's just not going to be good for your mental health, not going to be good for your spiritual health. The key is, once you are informed, you need to actually get activated. You need to do something useful. So when it comes to food shortages that are very likely coming, when it comes to supply chain issues that I think are going to continue getting worse, I think it would be prudent for everybody, especially people who have dependents, families that depend on them, to start taking some reasonable precautions. And that doesn't mean, you know, go build a bunker and sell everything you have and buy long-term storable food. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. But I think it would be foolish to see all of this coming and do nothing. Niccolo Machiavelli, who was quite Machiavellian, no pun intended there. But one of the things he wrote in The Prince was that one of the most common defects in man is that during the calm, they never prepare for the storm. Folks, you see the storm clouds gathering. You see where this is going. You need to get prepared. And one way to do that is when you go to the grocery store, instead of buying one thing that you need, buy two. It's not going to hurt to have a little bit of extra food around at your place. It's not going to hurt to have a little bit of extra water. I'm in Florida here on the coast. We get hurricanes. So, you know, people here on the coast know that you'd be foolish not to have at least some basic preparations to deal with, you know, what happens if your lights go out for 2 weeks. And that happened here. We lost power for 2 weeks where I'm sitting right now, just a few years ago, when a hurricane hit. And you don't want to be one of those fools that's scrambling around saying, where's the government? Why isn't the government here feeding me? Why isn't the government here taking care of me? If your safety plan or your plan to take care of your people involves depending on the government, it's a bad plan. You need to come up with a new one. So on food issues, I would say, you know, make sure you have some extra stuff around. It wouldn't hurt to plant a garden. You know, if you live in a place with decent soil, get yourself a vegetable garden growing, get yourself some potatoes growing, get yourself some chickens for the backyard to have some eggs, and make sure you have means to feed them. If that's your thing, if not, start building relationships with local farmers, get to the farmer's market and find out, who are the people in my community that are actually growing food? How can I encourage them? How can I develop a relationship with them? Can I get their seconds, right? The stuff that they're not usually going to be able to sell. So these are all, I think, prudent precautions that people can take. And when it comes to the gun grab, I say you need to be involved politically, right? I view politics really as self-defense. None of us want to be involved in politics, right? If you're watching this show, you're probably not one of those weirdos who just has this absurd desire to control other people's lives and manage other people's affairs, right? That's not the kind of people that we deal with. But folks, those are the types of people who are attracted to political power. And so you need to get involved somehow. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go run for office, but you need to get involved in the political realm. And that could be as simple as, hey, call up your state representative, call up your state senator, call up your congressman and say, hey, I'm with a group of people. We want a meeting. We want to talk to you about our concerns. We don't want you to be engaged in gun grabbing. And if you are, we're going to support your opponent in the next election. Get involved in the political realm. If you can't run for office, go find somebody to back. Go knock on doors for them. Go help them raise money. The establishment has got tons of money, and they're pretty good at duping naive people who don't follow things closely into rallying behind them come primary and come election. So we need patriots who love God, who love freedom, who want to preserve our institutions to get involved in the political realm. And that's critical on Second Amendment. It's critical on First Amendment. And it's critical on all these issues that we care about. And finally, over the long term, you know, you want to protect your children from these kinds of dangerous lies that are being fed to them in government schools and in the media. You know, you don't want, if you look at the totalitarian regimes of the last 100 years, one of their critical weapons has always been children. They radicalize children. They brainwash children. They get them to turn against their parents. Go look at what happened in China. Look at what happened in Nazi Germany. Look what happened in the Soviet Union, where kids were turning in their parents because they weren't good communists or they weren't good Nazis. Parents in America, we still have the freedom to raise and protect and educate our children. Find a good Christian school for them. Get involved in homeschooling. Find some way to protect them from the indoctrination.
That is such an insight there. I mean, I'm just looking back in my mind about Nazi Germany, where they had the paramilitary, you know, Nazi children. And then in communist China, they had the kids, you know, also forming paramilitary groups. And I'm seeing the same thing today in America, not necessarily formalized paramilitary, but Antifa. I mean, those people are pretty young people. You know, these are in some cases teenagers, people in their 20s and so forth, who are, you know, politically violent. And we're seeing the Supreme Court justices being threatened and so forth. And it makes you wonder, who's joining BLM? Who's joining Antifa? It's mostly young people. So we need to do something about that. That's a really great point. I want to switch gears and talk about how the world is really being polarized right now between the old guard, you know, which is the Western world, the United States, Europe, even some of their allies such as Japan and South Korea and so forth. And then the rest of the world, the Russia, China, you know, and just all of these other countries, some of them enemies, arch enemies of the United States, like Iran and so forth, who are coming up with agreements, Iran and China coming up with big agreements with each other, for example. And we do have a clip to show of residents of Burkina Faso are demanding that French troops leave and that Russian troops enter. This is kind of bizarre. So let's take a look at that clip. So Alex, just a few more references here before you comment. We've got the president of El Salvador being warned by the IMF and the World Bank not to make Bitcoin one of their official currencies. And you've got Nicaragua, an enemy of the United States, encouraging and allowing Russian troops to do exercises there. So we've got Russia now in the Western Hemisphere. Reminds me of the Cuban Missile Crisis here. What do you think is going on before our eyes here?
Well, I think the globalist elites, the deep staters, the predator class has been pretty clear about where they wanted to take the world. In fact, over 10 years ago, people at the Council on Foreign Relations, their propaganda mouthpiece, Foreign Affairs, started talking about what they describe as a shift from a unipolar world order to a multipolar world order. I mentioned it briefly in an earlier segment. And I think that's what we're watching right now. We are seeing the former world order, if you will, that was kind of led by the United States with strong support from Western Europe and Australia and Canada. We're seeing that gradually replaced, right? And I think that transition will accelerate in the days ahead. I think the Ukraine war will really help to be the catalyst for that. But ultimately, their objective is to build what they describe as a new world order. And they don't want that to be a quote unquote new world order based on the American model, based on the principles that the United States was founded on. They really want to discredit that and just completely excise it from the history books, except as a footnote to say, look how dumb those Americans were when they tried this thing called freedom and self-government and God-given rights. See how that worked out for them. And so ultimately, the new system that they want to build, most recently, they've been calling it a concert of nations, a world order led by and shepherded in by a concert of nations. And they're talking about, of course, governments, not nations, but communist China, Russia, South Africa, Brazil. They fully expect to retake Brazil from Jair Bolsonaro, the patriotic counter-revolutionary there who's trying to keep the communists at bay. They fully intend to reclaim Brazil as soon as possible. And then they hope that this new alliance, which if you actually dig in and you look at the history, these governments and even many of these leaders were actually put there with the support of the predator class in the Western world, with the Wall Street mega bankers and Berlin and London and so on. They want to just have a very different type of world system, one much more similar to what goes on in communist China today than with what we think of as traditional Americanism, with the rule of law and God-given rights and protections for private property and protections for free speech. So I think that's what we're witnessing. And there's another piece of the puzzle that I think is important. One of the most important defectors to ever defect from the Soviet Union, in my opinion, was a KGB disinformation specialist. He was in Department D at the KGB. His name was Anatoly Golitchyn. And I have two of his books behind me, New Lies for Old and the Perestroika Deception. And what he argued, he actually, this was back in the late 70s and even in the early 80s, he was predicting, he made a series of about 205 predictions that he said were going to come to pass. And he knew because he had worked on these long-range, long-term disinformation operations. And he warned that there was going to be a phony liberalization in Eastern Europe, that the Berlin Wall would probably come down. He even named names of who some of the leaders would be. He said that there would be a fraudulent collapse of communism in the Soviet Union, but that all the while, the same people who were running the communist machinery would continue to be in charge of business, politics, media, etc., throughout that bloc. And that's exactly what we saw, right? When the Nazi regime was brought down, we had the Nuremberg trials. The Nazis were put on trial. They ended up in a very precarious situation. A lot of them were hung, executed for war crimes. And yet when the communists fell after torturing and mass murdering tens of millions of people, they just renamed themselves oligarchs and they started new political parties. Instead of the Communist Party, it was the Socialist Party. And yet they held the reins of power. And so one of the things that Anatoly Golitchyn said is that as we get closer to the end, we'll see Russia, China, and their allies come out with what he described as a second October revolution, where the world would then be placed under a global system much more with much more in common than with communism than the former kind of free world. But we are seeing a gradual convergence, and I think that's going to accelerate. I think that's where they hope to go. And I don't think that is written in stone, but that's what these people want.
Well, thank you for your insight there. And it's confusing to me because, you know, usually you had America as the good guy, right? Ending fascism in Europe and so forth. But now we've got belligerent occupiers who do seem like they're subverting true American values. And so same thing in Europe. You know, Europe is totally compromised by the deep state, by those so-called global elite. So if they are the bad guys, the West are the bad guys, and the East, Russia and China and their allies, the one global communism, then who are the good guys? I'm going to have you answer that question as soon as we get back from this break.
The iSat Phone 2 is the latest generation satellite phone designed for the most reliable commercial satellite communications network in the world. The iSat Phone 2 from Inmarsat is ready, reliable, and robust. iSat Phone 2 has fast network registration and unrivaled battery life with up to 160 hours of standby time. iSat Phone 2 operates over global geostationary satellites with 99% network availability and reliable call stability and network connection. Engineered to withstand the most extreme conditions, the iSat Phone 2 is dust, splash, and shock resistant. The iSat Phone 2 has built-in tracking and assistance buttons and gives notifications even when the antenna is stowed. And with the easy-to-use interface and high-visibility display, the iSat Phone 2 is ready to go. Find out more at Inmarsat.com.
We're talking to Alex Newman of the Liberty Sentinel. So, Alex, if the West are no longer the good guys, at least the people who are temporarily in power now, and the East, they want to have global communism modeled on China and the social credit system and all of that, who are the good guys here?
Well, I think the good guys are the people who love the Lord, the people who love freedom, the people who love America, the patriots in the United States. And there are people like us all over the world. There are people like us all over Western Europe. They may not be as significant numerically or politically as we are in the United States, but there are forces that are working for freedom, that are working to stop this all over the world. There are forces in China and in Russia that are working to stop this. And so, I think we have really a lot of people around the world, millions and millions of people who are waking up on a regular basis to the fact that we're being deceived. And you know, I don't know that anybody has a perfect understanding of what's going on, but there is a growing awareness about these evil agendas. And there is a growing movement, international movement, and it's especially obvious in America, to resist these things. And so I would say those are the good guys, the people who are standing on truth, the people who are standing for freedom, for individual God-given rights. Those are the good guys. And I know it looks daunting. You know, we're up against very powerful people with endless money, with massive propaganda machinery at their disposal. But ultimately, the truth is incredibly powerful. And that's what has the evildoers so scared.
What about the situation in the Ukraine conflict, where Russia is saying they have collected evidence of U.S. funded bio research laboratories that are, you know, messing around with bioweapons, and China's demanding answers from the United States? So now you've got Russia and China in front of the UN Security Council accusing the U.S. of war crimes here, or at least violating, you know, treaties and so forth. It seems like Russia and China are the good guys in that scenario. I know it's not as simple as that, but can you weigh in on the bio labs in Ukraine and throughout the world that the U.S. and the deep state have been funding?
Yeah, well, you know, originally those biolabs were actually built by the Soviet Union. And, it's very hard to tell where the communist movement begins and where the deep state Wall Street mega bankers in America end. And in fact, I would submit to you that even at the high levels, they don't realize that at the highest levels, they know that very well. And you can trace this back through history. I mean, you read Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, you see the people who funded the overthrow of the Tsarist government to put Lenin and Trotsky and the rest of their mass murdering gaggle of terrorists and criminals in power. It was the Wall Street mega bankers, and it's documented in State Department records. It's documented in corporate records. Same thing with Communist China. The people who brought the communists to power, once again, members of the Council on Foreign Relations, people like George Marshall, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, who stabbed our ally Chiang Kai-shek in the back. You look at who brought Castro, Fidel Castro, to power. Same cabal of lunatics. You had Herbert Matthews at the New York Slimes telling us that Castro was a George Washington of Latin America, an anti-communist freedom fighter. You had the State Department arming Castro's forces and putting an arms embargo on Fulgencio Batista, our ally. And what you realize is that everything is not as it seems. At the highest levels of power, they are working together to enslave humanity. The mega bankers, the deep staters in the United States have no loyalty to our country. They have no loyalty to our Constitution, to the principles that underpin our republic. And they have much in common with the butchers who are ruling over China. Now, that's not to say that there's never infighting between these people, just like there's infighting in the mafia. You know, one guy deputy takes out the top boss because he wants to be the top boss. That stuff happens all the time. And these people are way worse than any mafia. They'll hate each other's families, right? They don't have any kind of moral scruples or principles. So there is infighting among these people. I don't want anybody to get the impression that it's just absolutely monolithic and undefeatable. But at the highest levels, I think what you see is, and I've argued the same thing about Putin in 2014, I did a very in-depth investigation into Putin and into his background. And I came to the conclusion that the evidence overwhelmingly shows Putin is absolutely part of the predator class. He absolutely is working to build this one world order. And I encourage people to go back and read those articles. I mean, him and Henry Kissinger are like two peas in a pod. Putin is actually pursuing to a letter the strategy outlined by Henry Kissinger in his book World Order. So you got to build these regional orders, these regional governments, and then merge those into a world order. While Putin is diligently right now building his Eurasian Union, even as the European Union seizes on this to deepen the European Union. So I think really when you boil it down, when you clear the smoke and the mirrors that the establishment puts up to confuse us, what you'll find is evil people in Beijing, in Moscow, in New York, in Washington, D.C., in London, and all these other capitals cooperating with each other. Again, that's not to say there are no differences. There are, but cooperating with each other against humanity.
So you think all of this rhetoric from Putin being against the Davos crowd and so forth is simply rhetoric and it's not really where his loyalty lies?
I think that's the most likely explanation. Again, like mafia bosses, it's possible Putin may have turned on them. It's possible they may have turned on Putin for whatever reason. But the evidence shows overwhelmingly and very clearly, I think, over a period of decades, that Putin was absolutely a creature of the establishment, a darling of the predator class at the international level. In fact, he was associated with the World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab described him as one of the WEF's young global leaders, right? So those connections are there. Him and Henry Kissinger, again, they are so close. I mean, Putin talks about this in his autobiography. They go to each other's houses for dinner. When Kissinger came over to Russia, he was awarded some of the highest honorary degrees and things from the Russian Foreign Ministry, and Putin just showered him with praise. These things are not coincidences. They reveal something much deeper and much darker. And I think that's the way to make sense of what's going on. Otherwise, just things don't really make sense. They don't pass the smell test. So,
well, Henry Kissinger does seem like one of those architects of the deep state and their agenda. And he recently said at the World Economic Forum that Ukraine should cede land to Russia, which is an interesting statement coming from him. But you also had George Soros, another person who could be accused of being an architect of the deep state. And he's saying that Putin and Xi Jinping are the enemies of the New World Order. And so it does seem very confusing to me, especially when you saw so many resources of the global corporate world being united and in a propaganda machine against Russia and for standing with Ukraine. It was a massive psyop right after the COVID psyop. Everything just kind of shifted to the pro-Ukraine, anti-Russian psyop. So how does that fit into your model of understanding things when Russia's part of that group?
Well, conflict has always been critical for advancing the New World Order agenda. If you look at the greatest strides toward one world system, they've always come in the aftermath of a war. So World War I led to the creation of the League of Nations. It led to a total restructuring of society, right? All the dads and husbands were sent off to die in the war. The wives and the mothers were pushed into the factories to take the jobs that the men had to leave. And then the children were put into the government brainwash camps under the guise of education. For the first time in American history, most kids then were being raised primarily by the government, if we're honest. The kids are spending more time with the government than with their parents by far. Then World War II, we got the United Abominations, we got the IMF, we got the World Bank, we got the Bretton Woods architecture. They really laid the foundation for what they were hoping would be the one world system. And they said this openly at the time. In fact, in the early 1960s, Lincoln Bloomfield, another member of the Council on Foreign Relations, he was hired by the State Department and the Institute for Defense Analyses to come up with a report. Now, the title of the report gives away the agenda. It was a world effectively controlled by the United Nations. And you can still get a copy of this report. It's on the internet. And their conclusion was the fastest
way. They really showed their hand there, didn't they?
They did. I mean, the title gives it away. Yep.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time, Alex, but people can get more of your reporting at thelibertysentinel.org and thenewamerican.com. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for watching AmericanMediaPeriscope.com. We are America's Patriot-only network. You can get my breaking news updates at SeanMorganReport.com. Follow me on Truth Social at SeanMorganReport. God bless all you patriots. Good night. Good luck.